Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So today we are continuing our reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita. And I just have to locate exactly where. Please bear with me for a second or ten. Yes. So last time we read about the concert that Srila Prabhupada participated in, and it was really quite spectacular. Srila Prabhupada, what chapter are we in?
Here it says on this bookmark, Srila Prabhupada, Swami invites the hippies.
Swami invites the hippies. I don't know about that. Or maybe it is. All right, yes, that's the chapter. Yes, the Mantra Rock Dance. The next morning, yes, okay. Right, so we're reading from the third volume of Prabhupada Lilamrita. Only he could lead them. We're reading from chapter 22, Swami Invites the Hippies. And we've just finished the Mantra Rock Dance. And the next morning, many, many young people came and took part in the morning program, although they were in different conditions of disrepair, you could say. So then the scene switches back to New York from San Francisco. So let's carry on. Yes, carry on here in New York. Do what?
To make it you're a bit soft. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Hope that's all right. In New York, since there were so few women present at the temple, people had inquired whether it was possible for a woman to join the Krishna consciousness movement. But in San Francisco, that question never arose. Most of the men who came to learn from Swamiji came with their girlfriends. To Prabhupada, these boys and girls, eager for chanting and hearing about Krishna, were like sparks of faith to be fanned into steady blazing fires of devotional life. There was no question of us asking the newcomers to give up their girlfriends or boyfriends. and yet he uncompromisingly preached no illicit sex. The dilemma, however, seemed to have an obvious solution. Marry the couples in Krishna consciousness. Because traditionally a sannyasi would never arrange or perform marriages. By Indian standards, someone might criticize Prabhupada for allowing any mingling of the sexes. But Prabhupada gave priority to spreading Krishna consciousness. What Indian, however critical, had ever tried to transplant the essence of India's spiritual culture into the Western culture? Prabhupada saw that to change the American social system and completely separate the men from the women would not be possible. But to compromise his standard of no illicit sex was also not possible. Therefore, Krishna conscious married life, the Grihastha ashram, would be the best arrangement for many of his new aspiring disciples. In Krishna consciousness, husband and wife could live together and help one another in spiritual progress. It was an authorized arrangement for allowing a man and woman to associate. If a spiritual master, he found it necessary to perform marriages himself, he would do it. But first, these young couples would have to become attracted to Krishna consciousness. Excuse me. Got to somehow get this thing closer while giving the class. Okay, we'll continue in a sec. Yes, so actually last Ekadasi, we discussed this a little bit, really a little, just very, very little bit. Maybe actually we only just read this little section at the end. But the thing is that Srila Prabhupada was so fixed in preaching Krishna consciousness that he was willing, not just willing, but he was able, he was able to deal with these people. That was the first point, that the cultural gap was vast, actually. The fact is that even for many of just the regular sort of middle-aged and older Americans, that for them to deal with and take seriously and be able to deal with and successfully interact with these young hippie people, particularly those who are in San Francisco. For so many, middle class, middle age, and older Americans, they couldn't deal with them. And so therefore there was just this total social separation. And Srila Prabhupada came from a culturally even more different background. Socially even more different. But based on his enthusiasm to spread Krishna consciousness, he was willing to deal with such people, and he was able to successfully deal with such people, at least many of them, and really influence them to change their ways. And he was accepted by them. It's a very amazing achievement, actually. A really amazing cultural and social achievement. And Prabhupada was only able to do it on the basis of Krishna consciousness. I know, because I was from that culture. Oh, Krishna. Anyway, sufficiently from that culture. And what a world apart. But anyway, this is Krishna consciousness. On the basis of Krishna consciousness, a person who is Krishna conscious enough, like Srila Prabhupada, can bridge a gap of that sort, a major gap. Yes. And part of it was now this idea of the young boys and girls who are together and living together in so many cases. They would just come together, meet, and from the first night of the day that they met, they would just live together. This was not unusual. But Prabhupada was able to deal with it and influence them that the approach, if they were to really get the nectar of Krishna consciousness, which they were beginning to experience, but also have the relationships that they had, they should get married. So let's continue from here. Joan Campanella had grown up in a wealthy suburb of Portland, Oregon, where her father was a corporate tax attorney. She and her sister had their own sports cars and their own boats for sailing on Lake Oswego. Disgusted by the sorority life at the University of Oregon, sorority means the dormitory, well, the dormitories and just the social clubs. In this case, sorority indicates female. It's got its roots in Latin. So those clubs, the female clubs at the University of Oregon, Joan had dropped out during her first term and enrolled at Reed College, where she had studied ceramics, weaving, and calligraphy. In 1963, she had moved to San Francisco and become the co-owner of a ceramic shop. Although she had then had many friends among fashionable shopkeepers, folk singers, and dancers, she had remained aloof and introspective. It was through her sister Jan that Joan had first met Srila Prabhupada. Jan had gone with a boyfriend, Michael Grant, to live in New York City, where Michael had worked as a music arranger. Michael is Mukunda Prabhu at that time, a very dear old friend of mine. Now Mukunda Maharaj. In 1965, they had met Swamiji while he was living alone on the Bowery, and they'd become his initiated disciples, Mukunda and Janaki. Swamiji had asked them to get married, and they had invited Joan to the wedding. As a wedding guest for one day, Joan had then briefly entered Swamiji's transcendental world at 26 Second Avenue, and he had kept her busy all day, making dough and filling kachori pastries for the wedding feast. Joan had worked in one room and Swamiji had worked in the kitchen, although he had repeatedly come in and guided her in making the kachoris properly, telling her not to touch her clothes or body while cooking and instructing her not to smoke cigarettes because the food was to be offered to Lord Krishna and therefore had to be prepared purely. Joan had been convinced by this brief association that Swamiji was a great spiritual teacher, but she had returned to San Francisco without pursuing Krishna consciousness further. So there we see a really classic example of Srila Prabhupada just able to deal with cultural, you could say, cultural crises, really, cross-cultural crises, that this young lady, she's, you know, normally in the Western culture, when you're cooking something, normally at some point in the course of the cooking process, you will taste what you are cooking to make sure, supposedly, that it's all right. But Prabhupada told her, not only don't taste anything, but don't touch your face, your body, while you're cooking. And while you're at it, don't smoke cigarettes. Oh, really? It's so amazing. Srila Prabhupada, his ability to move between the cultures, or not exactly, well, move between, you could say, but tolerate these things which for lesser devotees from his sort of background, I mean socially, culturally, but of lesser spiritual stature, they wouldn't be able to deal with it. They wouldn't be able to deal with it. They would just say, these people are too much, they're hopeless, and, you know, we're going back to India. This is essentially what Prabhupada's godbrothers had done when they came to England and Germany briefly, well, for a little while, back in the 30s. They had met a couple of people in London. One lady became initiated. But in terms of spreading Krishna consciousness, basically nothing had happened. And it's all on the basis of these cultural and social considerations. Those devotees couldn't really work with those people and be accepted by those people and really be able to influence those people so they'd be able to become serious followers. I remember when I first joined the temple in London, in the first few days that I was living in the temple, I would say within the first week, one devotee went to visit the Gaudiya Mutt Center, which was that lady's house in the suburbs of northern London somewhere, and to meet her and just, you know, see what's going on, and maybe she'd like to come and get involved with us. So he knocked on the door there, and there's a little sign. He knocked on the door, she just opened the door just a little so she could look through, and he said a few words, and she said, no, no, please go. She basically just kicked him out and just closed the door. And that was the only devotee who was made. So what can you say? But Srila Prabhupada was so much able to bridge gaps, and on the basis of his understanding of Krishna consciousness and Lord Chaitanya's mood, and on the basis of his purity and his actually being in the mood of Lord Chaitanya of spreading Krishna consciousness, as I said some minutes ago, he was able to deal with the people, tolerate the people, deal with them, befriend them in such ways that they accepted Krishna consciousness and become accepted by them. This is an achievement. All right, so a few months later, Mukunda and Janaki had driven, because they were in New York, Mukunda and Janaki. They'd driven to the West Coast with plans of going soon to India, but had changed their plans when Mukunda had received a letter from Swamiji asking him to try to start a Krishna conscious temple in California. Mukunda had talked about Swamiji to Joan and other friends, and he had found that a lot of young people were interested. Joan had then accompanied Mukunda, Janaki, and a boy named Roger Seagull, who became Gurudas, and who became her husband, actually, to the mountains in Oregon, where they had visited their mutual friends Sam and Marjorie, who became Shamsunda and Malati, who had been living in a forest lookout tower in the middle of a forest, looking for forest fires. That was a job, sort of a job. Mukunda had explained what he had known of Krishna consciousness, and the six of them had begun chanting Hare Krishna together. They had been especially interested in Swamiji's teachings about elevating consciousness without drugs. Mukunda had talked excitedly about Swamiji's having asked him to start a temple in California. And soon he and his wife Janaki, Sam and his girlfriend Marjorie, and Roger and Joan, now intimate friends, had moved to an apartment in San Francisco to find a storefront and set the stage for Swamiji. This is all before the Mantra Rock Dance, which we read about last Ekadasi, setting the scene. What do they call it? They call it a prequel, I've heard. A prequel. Okay. After Swamiji's arrival, Joan had begun attending the temple kirtans. She felt drawn to Swamiji and the chanting, and she especially liked the informal visiting hours. Swamiji would sit in his rocking chair with his hand in his bead bag, chanting the holy names, and Joan would sit fascinated, watching his fingers moving within the bag. One day, during Swamiji's visiting hours, while Swamiji was sitting in his rocking chair and Joan and others were sitting at his feet, Janaki's cat crept in through the hallway door and began slowly coming down the hallway. The cat came closer and closer and slowly meandered right in front of Swamiji's feet. It sat down, looking up intently at Swamiji, and began to meow. None of the devotees knew what to expect. Swamiji began gently stroking the back of the cat with his foot, saying, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Are you feeding him prasadam milk? Joan speaks. I was touched by Swamiji's activities and his kindness, even to cats, and I longed for more association with him. Joan began to understand that serving Swamiji was a serious matter, but she didn't want to jump into initiation until she was 100% sure about it. Sometimes she would cry in ecstasy, and sometimes she would fall asleep during Swamiji's lecture. So she remained hesitant and skeptical, wondering, how can I actually apply Swamiji's teachings to my life? One evening, Swamiji asked her, when are you going to be initiated? Joan said that she didn't know, but that she relished reading his books and chanting Hare Krishna. She said that because she was attracted to the mountains and to elevated spiritual consciousness, she wanted to travel to Tibet. Swamiji, sitting in his rocking chair, looked down at Joan as she sat at his feet. She felt he was looking right through her. "I can take you to a higher place than Tibet," he said. "Just see." Joan suddenly felt that Swamiji knew everything about her, and she understood, "Oh, I have to see through his eyes what Krishna consciousness is." He was promising that he would take her to some very elevated realm, but she would have to see it. It was then that Joan decided to become Swamiji's disciple. When she told her boyfriend Roger, he was astounded. He and Joan had come to the kirtans and lectures together, but he still had doubts. Maybe it would be good for him and Joan to get married, but not initiated. Joan, however, was more determined. She explained to Roger that Swamiji hadn't come just to perform marriages. You had to get initiated first. Yeah, okay. Well, she became Jadarani, who served in Prabhupada's movement for many years, an artist. And Janaki, the wife of Mukunda, now Mukunda Maharaj, not so long after all of this, she drifted away. When I met Mukunda Prabhu, that was Mukunda Maharaj, it was January 1973 in London. That's where he was at that time, because he and Shamsundar and Gurudas and their wives had come to London. So Mukunda stayed on, and he was temple president in Bhaktivedanta Manor. And I went there at the end of 73 and became the treasurer. And we were working together. We were a team working together. But she'd already left him and left Krishna consciousness, basically. So, okay, Roger Seagal, Gurudas, who's the boyfriend going to become the husband of Jadarani for a while. Of Yamuna. Not Jadarani. Sorry, Jadarani. Someone else altogether. I'm sorry. Krishna. Yamuna, who became the great cook. Sure. Who wrote the great cookbook. And who unfortunately passed away. I had invited her to come to South Africa. Actually, maybe a year before she passed away, or 6 months maybe. I think she was in Mayapur. And she agreed to come and teach cooking. But unfortunately, she passed away. Anyway, sorry about that mistake. Roger Seagal had grown up in New York. He was following a Hatha Yoga guru, had experimented with psychedelic chemicals, means he was totally into taking them, and had traveled in the deep south as a civil rights activist, taking part in freedom marches with the blacks. Large-bodied, sociable, and outgoing, he had lots of friends in San Francisco. At the airport, in a merry mood with the Haight-Ashbury crowd, he had seen Swamiji for the first time and had been especially struck by Swamiji's regal bearing and absence of self-consciousness. The concept of reincarnation had always intrigued him. But after attending some of Swamiji's lectures and hearing him explain transmigration of the soul, he felt he had found someone who definitely knew the answer to any question about life after death. One night, after attending the program at the temple, Roger returned to his apartment and sat down on the fire escape to meditate on what Swamiji had said. The world is false, he had said. But it feels real to me, Roger thought. If I pinch my arm, I feel pain. So how is that illusion? This fire escape is real. Otherwise, I'd be falling in space. This space is real, isn't it? Roger decided he didn't understand what Swamiji meant by illusion. If I try to walk through the wall, he thought, would that be real or not? Maybe the wall's reality is just in my mind. To test the illusion, he went inside his apartment, concentrated his mind, and walked against the wall. Smack! He sat down again and thought, what does Swamiji mean when he says that the world is illusion? He decided he should ask at the next meeting. He did. And Swamiji told him that actually the world is real because it's created by God, the Supreme Reality. But it is unreal in the sense that everything material is temporary. When a person takes the temporary world to be permanent and all in all, he is in illusion. Only the spiritual world, Swamiji explained, is eternal and therefore real. Roger was satisfied by Swamiji's answer, but he had other difficulties. He thought Swamiji too conservative. When Swamiji said that people's dogs must be kept outside the temple, Roger didn't like it. Many visitors brought pet dogs with them to the temple, and now there was a hitching post in front of the building just to accommodate the pets on leashes. But Swamiji wouldn't allow any pets inside. This philosophy is for humans, he said. A cat or dog cannot understand it. Although if he hears the chanting of Hare Krishna, he can receive a higher birth in the future. Roger also had other points of contention with what he considered Swamiji's conservative philosophy. Swamiji repeatedly spoke against uncontrolled habits like smoking, but Roger couldn't imagine giving up such things, and the instructions about restricting sex life especially bothered him. Yet despite his not following very strictly, Roger felt himself developing a love for Swamiji and Krishna. He sensed that Swamiji had much to teach him, and that Swamiji was doing it in a certain way and a certain order. Roger knew that Swamiji saw him as a baby in spiritual life who had to be spoon-fed. He knew he had to become submissive and accept whatever Swamiji gave him. Okay, let's just read one more section. Sam Spearstra, who became Shamsundar. Sam Spearstra, tall and slender with curly reddish-gold hair, was athletic. He had trained as an Olympic skier, yet artistic. He was a writer and wood sculptor. He had graduated from Reed College in Oregon and gone on as a Fulbright scholar to a small college in Switzerland, where he had obtained an M.A. in philosophy. He was popular, as Mukunda saw him, the epitome of the rugged individualist. When Mukunda had visited Sam at his mountain lookout tower and told him about Swamiji and Krishna consciousness, Sam had been intrigued by the new ideas. Sam's life had nearly reached a dead end, that he had seen hope in what Mukunda and Janaki had been saying about Swamiji. After spending only a few days with Mukunda, Sam had been eager to help him establish a temple of Krishna consciousness in San Francisco. Sam was the one who knew the local rock stars and had persuaded them to appear at the Avalon with Swami Bhaktivedanta, whom he had never met. Sam had seen Swamiji for the first time when Swamiji had arrived at the San Francisco airport, and Sam had later insisted that he had seen a flash of light coming from Swamiji's body. At first, Sam had been afraid to say anything, nor had he known what to say. Prabhupada was completely new to him and seemed so elevated. But the day after the program at the Avalon, when Mukunda told Prabhupada that Sam had arranged the dance, Prabhupada sent for him to find out how much money they'd made. Sitting across from Prabhupada, who sat behind his small desk, Sam informed him they'd made about $1,500 profit. "Well then," Srila Prabhupada said, "you will be the treasurer." Then Srila Prabhupada asked him, "What is your idea of God?" "God is one," Sam replied. Prabhupada asked, "What is the purpose of worshipping God?" Sam replied, "To become one with God." "No," Prabhupada said, "you cannot become one with God. God and you are always two different individuals. But you can become one in interest with him." And then he told Sam about Krishna. After they talked, Prabhupada said, "You can come up every day and I will teach you how to do books." Means how to keep the financial records, bookkeeping. So Sam began meeting with Prabhupada for half an hour a day to learn bookkeeping. "Sam, I had never been very good at keeping books, and I really didn't want to do it. But it was a good excuse to come and see Swamiji every day. He would chew me out," means he would chastise me, criticize me, "when I would spend too much money, or when I couldn't balance the books properly. I really loved the idea that he was so practical, that he knew bookkeeping. He became so much more of a friend from the beginning, rather than some idealized person from another sphere of life. I took almost all my practical questions to him. I learned to answer things for myself based on the way Swamiji always answered day-to-day problems. And the first thing he made me do was to get married to my girlfriend." Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. What an amazing transcendental person. Not only able to deal with the hippies, but able to train someone in bookkeeping. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.